Good morning! I'm Steve Whitmire, and you're listening to the Too Much Scrolling Podcast. I'll see you in the future.
Good morning! Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for September 24th, 2019. I'm Steve Fodor.
Hey, and I'm super relaxed, Chip Hessenflug.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. If you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. This week, Chip, it's your favorite week of the show, the week of the new fall TV premieres that you've never heard of.
And I can't wait, Steve. I can't wait. What's going to come on television that I'll probably miss?
Okay, let's go over some of the returning shows that you have heard of. This is the beginning of season 45 of Saturday Night Live this Saturday.
Steve, I don't watch this show. How do I even know these skits?
You know everything about Saturday Night Live without watching it. The neat part about Saturday Night Live in the last 5 or 6 years is nobody actually has to watch it anymore. Just somebody watches it, and then they put up the clips of the best bits of the hour and a half show so we can watch them Sunday morning.
So we get about 15 minutes.
Maybe 15 minutes tops. I do still watch Saturday Night Live, but I'm watching it a lot less than I used to. Speaking of shows I watch a lot less than I used to, The Simpsons season 31 is premiering this Sunday.
What's a Simpson we're talking about?
It's
I remember Simpsons when I was younger, Steve.
Yes, now you're older, and they're not. They're the same age as they always were. 31 years of that show. The 30th Treehouse of Horror is coming up in October, and it is episode 666. How about that?
Well, there you go. How to be clever.
The
Simpsons are very clever.
That's it. Speaking of clever, season 23 of South Park is premiering this week. It's amazing to think that show's still on the air.
No kidding. They said they would stop when they stopped having ideas. And it just
the news keeps giving them new ideas.
Trey Parker and Matt Stone just keep going.
Uh-huh. Brilliant guys.
Yeah, when it first came out, we used to have viewing parties.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when I was living in Richmond, and all my neighbors we'd all come together and cook something and
watch
South Park, interestingly enough.
Nice. 23 years ago. How about that?
In college, we would watch ALF. Well, and what did you guys watch? Animaniacs?
Oh, yeah. Animaniacs was, okay. That was the big staple of our TV viewing in college, was Animaniacs, Tiny Toon Adventures. We watched a lot of cartoons. The Batman, the animated series.
Okay.
All of those are right there. I can't wait for those to be rebooted, because those are coming up pretty soon. You know, TV has changed a lot in the last 30 years. We've got...
A lot of people think it's hell.
You know that much?
I do know that
You do know that much. All right, fine. So, yes, there is a TV show called The Good Place, which is about going to heaven, which is The Good Place. And then you know the secret about this?
Steve, how in the world do I know stuff about television? I don't watch television.
All right. So you spilled the beans on season one.
I didn't say anything. I just took a guess.
Those of you who are not watching The Good Place, I really, really recommend it. It's on Netflix. You should binge through the first three seasons. Season four is opening this week, and it is the final, the end of the entire story. This is one of those sitcoms.
Is he going to go back to the Cheers bar?
They did that. There was an episode where Ted Danson was bartender.
Was Woody in it?
No. They didn't get any cameos. They didn't have any cameos, but it was a Ted Danson managing a bar scene.
Cliff wasn't drinking a beer?
No. All of those, they didn't have any cameos.
Cliff sounds a lot like that guy from Toy Story.
And all of the other Pixar movies.
That's right.
His voice has been in every Pixar movie. But yes, The Good Place, I really highly recommend. One of our listeners got me hooked on the podcast, the Good Place podcast, where they come together as a cast and crew and discuss the show weekly on their podcast.
That must be hell.
It's wonderful. It is fantastic. I look forward to that story arc ending, because that's one of those stories where they actually had a beginning, a middle, and an end to a sitcom. This is unheard of in television.
That is amazing, because they usually stretch them off. That sounds very British. British, they do that.
Yeah, it does seem like a British way of doing things, but this is a very American show, that's for sure. Television certainly you know, there's new ways to watch TV, and we've got so many streaming services.
Sure.
I look forward to the second season of Castle Rock. That's not coming out this week. That's coming in another month, but I have high expectations for what we're going to see from that series.
This looks like the week before Halloween.
Mm-hmm. Good
and
timing.
And Castle Rock, oh, that was a great, great series. That's going to be on Hulu.
Mm-hmm.
And so
I recommend that you go back.
We
and
will go.
Catch
and,
that one.
I think you can get a month subscription for $5.99.
Mm-hmm.
So that seems like a perfectly reasonable price to
yes.
pay for a series.
And then on November 1st, all the Apple TV Plus shows are going to come out. So you and I are going to have access to some more television, and hopefully they're going to be good. They've been hyping up the idea of this television service from Apple for years now. They've got a lot of stars. Hopefully they've been able to put together some good programming, and we'll have to find out about that on November 1st.
Sure, we'll go through that and see what we're going to watch.
There you go.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. You know, today, September 24th, is the anniversary of the birth of one of my...
Did you say one? One!
One of my idols was born
one.
On this date, September 24th, 1936. That is Jim Henson, a genius of entertainment and skill in his given profession.
Well, you know, he found the Rainbow Connection, Steve.
Yeah, there's some wonderful lessons that I've learned in my life from pieces of felt that were shaken around by geniuses.
And with a lot of guests.
Yeah.
And a lot of silliness.
Yes.
And Gonzo.
They were very Gonzo, that's for sure.
That's right. And also, what was the name of the character that shot the cannon every time?
That was Gonzo. The great Gonzo shot himself out of a cannon.
Well, the cannon did. Oh, and there was the guy that
Crazy Harry, the
he juggled the fish
guy.
Oh yeah, it's Crazy Harry.
Lou the fish juggler. Yeah, you, for somebody who doesn't watch television, you know a lot of things.
Well, I know a lot about the Muppet Show.
The Muppet Show was certainly the highlight of Jim Henson's career for my childhood. That is the one piece that I liked the most. But I certainly am a big fan of what he did with the Muppets, all the puppetry that happened on Sesame Street, and all the things that happened in those weird movies, The Dark Crystal and Labyrinth, have certainly a strange idea going on in those.
There was a lot of exploration going on there, Steve.
Yes. Yeah. Visual cinema. You haven't, I'm sure, watched the new Dark Crystal on Netflix.
I have
yet.
Not, Steve. It's waiting there for me.
I have watched a few hours of it, and it is stunningly beautiful. The visuals are beautiful, but I have no idea what's happening in this show.
Do you need a lava lamp and some incense?
I think I need a Wikipedia and trying to figure out what is happening in the plot of this. There's characters that are doing things, and I just get lost in the visuals. I think that's true of the original Dark Crystal as well.
I think you could probably sit down and meditate, find your inner Yoda, there Steve, you go. And see if it has anything to
that's
help
That's more
with.
Frank Oz than Jim Henson, but that's okay. They work together a
they
lot.
They did, didn't they?
I got a chance to watch the Defunct Land miniseries about Jim Henson. This is a 3-hour documentary.
Where did you see that?
This is on YouTube. This
is
a YouTube
really?
Series. And this is just an interesting chronology documentary looking back at all the things that Jim Henson did and talking a little bit about his personality. There's not a lot of my favorite kind of documentary in this where they explore a story beginning, middle, and end. Mm-hmm. This is a chronology. First this happened, then this happened, then this happened. But they have all the footage and they have all the people talking about these things that happened.
Now, you said this is a miniseries. How many episodes are there?
This is 6 episodes, 30 minutes each, for a total of 3 hours.
Wow. And these are YouTube financed.
Oh, I don't know if YouTube financed this or not. Defunct Land is a YouTube channel.
Oh, okay. So Defunct Land, I think, also does maybe a Disney series on that, too.
The Defunct Land has given us lots of interesting okay. video. Their original premise was looking at defunct places,
okay.
like parts of Disney World that are no longer used, and old parks that are no longer used.
How fascinating.
This is fascinating.
So what you've got is somebody who wanted to tell a story has found a channel on YouTube that would probably give them the greatest exposure for that. Because, you know, you're packaging it together.
Mm-hmm.
And YouTube just becomes a distributor of that. And there's no cost for that. There it's you basically go. Your time. How lovely.
I love this. I loved every minute of this. I watched all 3 hours of it while I was supposed to be watching my son playing Ultimate Frisbee. Do you know what Ultimate Frisbee is?
I do. It's Frisbee football.
Yeah, it's like football.
That's right.
It's like football with a Frisbee. I didn't understand any of it. But I was watching puppets, so I was happy.
Well, it's a great sport. By the way, Ultimate is a great sport. There's a lot of kids who play it.
Yeah.
And a lot of adults who play it, too.
Yeah.
The league's all over the place.
Yeah, it's very interesting, especially with the puppets. This documentary gives just a lot of background of all those nostalgic things.
Steve's present for the games.
I was there. It was raining, too. It was raining. I was outside, and I was watching YouTube in my trench coat with my umbrella.
God bless you, man.
That's the weekend. That is a picture of Steve on the weekend right there.
Exactly.
This biography is good. I do recommend that you read the Jim Henson The Biography by Brian J. Jones.
Okay.
I think that is required reading to actually really know the man, Jim Henson, before you see this list of chronology of nostalgia.
And just give me an idea. Name something of Jim Henson that maybe we would not recognize.
The Jim Henson Creature Shop has been involved in lots of other movies that are not Jim Henson movies. You mm-hmm. see his puppets and his thinking, his brain at work in creating all sorts of different things. Mostly he's known for The Muppets and for Sesame Street.
Sure.
Those are my Jim Henson pieces. But he was a really interesting thinker who did a lot of interesting... Remember The Storyteller? That's supposed to be coming back, too. The Storyteller series, which was on ABC.
Sure.
You say sure.
I do remember.
You do remember existed.
Yes, I do.
The short story format is one of my favorite storytelling conveyances.
Sure.
On TV, Twilight Zone and
Amazing Stories,
which always go together. And then The Storyteller is that third one on that list. I got a lot of information here about Fraggle Rock. I never had cable.
HBO. It was on HBO.
And that was why I never saw it, because it was on HBO. It was very limited.
I didn't
limited.
See it either. I saw maybe a few episodes.
I didn't know that really the point of that show in Jim Henson's mind was to teach kids about working together and to avoid war, because there are four different types of creatures in that show, and trying to avoid conflicts between the different types of quote-unquote people was his point. That's what he was trying to get at with that show. That okay. I missed that because I didn't have cable and I didn't have access to that show. I should really go back and look at that, but it's obviously very geared toward a younger mind than mine.
That sounds work. You sounds, can work that, Steve.
Sounds like just like what I need. There are other people that I idolize in this world, and one of them is Bill Gates. The documentary about Bill Gates came out this week on Netflix.
Is that one called Not Steve Jobs?
Yes, it is. That is the subtitle. Not Steve Jobs. Not so much of a jerk, Bill Gates. This one's called Inside Bill's Brain, Decoding Bill Gates. This is a three-part, three-hour documentary, just dropped on Netflix on Friday.
Did it really?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so this looks very interesting. I have a lot of interest. And Gates is just a fascinating person and truly one of our problem solvers. In fact, maybe not. He doesn't sell himself like Elon Musk does, but he probably is much more concrete as far as solving something. I think malaria is one of the areas that the Gates Foundation has worked a significant amount. I put a significant amount of effort in mm-hmm. trying to solve, along with a whole bunch of other stuff. Tell us a little bit about this Netflix series, Steve.
It is a three-part series. The first episode is all about how he changed sanitation in the developing world.
Tell me about that.
Sanitation has been a huge problem. A lot of disease in the developing world comes from how you get rid of your human waste, and if you put it into the same place that your water source is, that's a real problem for children and elderly people in these areas.
Sure.
So he went through and decided to have a contest to find a way to build a inexpensive toilet that could run with no water and no energy and destroy any of the bacteria and microbes in the human waste before it got back into the water supply.
All right, so is this for third world countries, or are we talking about U.S.?
This is for third world countries. Okay. This is for developing world. This is a huge problem amongst huge...
Dysentery is a huge issue. People die from it. Mm-hmm. And when you are in an area, and I'm going to use an example, the tribe down the street decides to use the creek as the restroom, mm-hmm. and you're on the other side, and this is your drinking water. There's all sorts of challenges with what you just described.
Yes.
And so what was their solution?
They have a toilet
that
runs on the energy that is made from the human waste itself.
This sounds fascinating, Steve.
It really is. The idea of the problem solver, that Bill Gates goes at a problem and decodes the problem and finds a solution.
Well, it seems, I mean, that was what Microsoft was trying mm-hmm. to do. How do we get, all this stuff to work?
And that is the best thing about this documentary, is they put together, here's how he solved a problem in Microsoft time, here's how he's solving a problem today with a different set of problems, and how he sits down and uses his brain to solve these things.
All right, so part two says how the brain works.
Mm-hmm.
Or how Bill's brain works. Yes. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yes, his wife Melinda laughed out loud for a minute of this documentary.
Is that called LOL?
When they asked her, how does your husband's brain work? She starts laughing out loud. And they're like, what? Why is that so funny to you? She goes, I don't want to know how his brain works. And I don't think anybody else wants to know how it works. To us, outside of Bill's head, it seems like chaos. He is just putting together all of these ideas, but he comes out at the end with a solution.
Well, and that is what you learn, I guess, in programming.
Yeah.
Because programming is, computers are stupid. Right. You've got to tell them what to do. And what you're dealing with in nature or some problem, you're dealing with variables that you've got the known variables, okay, that you can kind of address. You've got known variables that you can't address at all. Mm-hmm. And then, the most difficult part is the unknown variables that you don't know you're missing.
Right.
And that's the problem with modeling. But that's also what computers have taken a lot of things that we do kind of know a little bit about and kind of worked on solutions. And every year it seems to get better.
This is the best episode of the three. Because, yes, that is exactly how Bill Gates' brain works. He takes apart a problem into its constituent parts and finds a solution somehow. This episode also talks about how they've tried to eradicate polio around the world. Polio is still a problem. Even though we have solved it here in our part of the universe, there are still parts of our planet where polio is huge.
Have they sent Jenny McCarthy over?
That might be. They do talk about how the immunization is looked upon as, somebody else is giving us this unknown drug.
Sure.
Can we trust those people? And the amount of trust that it takes to take an immunization from a different country mm-hmm. and apply it to your people, that is talked about a lot in this.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was driving by a big building, had a Huawei sign under it. And, Huawei is a Chinese company. It's mm-hmm. it's been accused of spying.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they're here in the United States and they're trying to gain trust. I mean, you can see what the challenge is there.
Yeah, very much.
So, anyway, this seems, very similar. We have this foreign group mm-hmm. saying, oh, we're just going to shoot this into you.
Yeah. We're going to help your children. We're going to give them this medicine.
Have they sent Josh Gad over there, maybe from the Book of Mormon, and see what
would
he can
that
do?
Help? Would
maybe
that,
he can help.
Maybe that would do it. This episode also goes into Bill's friendship with Paul Allen and Kent Evans and Warren Buffett and how he has used those other brains to help him in his quests to solve the world's problems.
Now, is this concerning the transfer of wealth? He has very strong feelings on that mm-hmm. and about concentrated wealth, and he doesn't feel it should go on for generations after generations. And so there's some strategies that him and that Gates and Buffett have basically tried to convince other incredibly wealthy people to do. This is a very interesting thing. Most of the time, extreme wealth doesn't last multiple generations.
Right.
But, yeah, this is something he feels is an issue, and my goodness, he's got a platform that he can do this.
He can do just about anything with the money that he's got, that's for sure. And hopefully he's choosing the right paths. Part three is all about Bill's relationship with his wife, Melinda. They met when they were very young. Bill Gates was very young for a very long time. Now he has turned that corner, and you look at him, and he's now 65, and he looks like a 65-year-old, but he had that young baby face for so long.
You know, we were talking our last show, or the show after, about the face of smart people, mm-hmm. and how many times it was a caricature we'd draw, like a little Albert Einstein. Mm-hmm. I think for today's, if you were going to draw a smart person, you could do a caricature of Bill Gates, and we'd all recognize mm-hmm. that. So, you know, for a person like Bill Gates, who was incredibly bright, certainly not all bright people are able to change the world or transform the world the way he has been able to do so. But, you know, finding that partner for life,
yeah,
is a very big challenge.
That there is a discussion here about the big challenge of this really introverted, really nerdy guy. That stereotype nerd is Bill Gates, that's for
nerd.
Sure. Yeah. And finding this lovely lady who is the balance to his, you know, he would just sit in his room and read books if he could, and she was the one who was saying, you know, we really need to have a balance. We need to go out. We need to go and do things.
Steve, I think that's the power partnership, mm-hmm. and how, you know, whether you wanted to go into politics or you want to be a leader of something, that team approach, because, you know, as strong as polarizing maybe as Trump is, his wife does whatever the first lady does. And think of, you know, Barack Obama and what Michelle Obama was mm-hmm. able to do, and just keep going back.
Yeah.
It's a team approach where they balance each other. You yep. know, if one's the scientist, the other may be the philanthropist, you know, something of that nature.
Or like my marriage, where one's the clown and one's the one who goes, yes, well, here's what we're going to do, stop making jokes. It works. This is a great documentary. I really recommend. I think you would like this especially.
I think I would. This is right up my alley.
Yeah, go up to Netflix. Go The Inside Bill's Brain, Decoding Bill Gates, new this week on Netflix. Opening in theaters this week, there's some movies that might be of interest. The first one is called Judy. This is the biography of Judy Garland, here played by Renee Zellweger.
This is a very interesting. I saw this this trailer a long time ago, and I've been waiting for this. This certainly looks like, and we were just in time for Oscar nominations.
Mm-hmm. This might be on that list. This looks like a great performance from Renee Zellweger.
So Judy Garland obviously was a star of The Wizard of Oz. That's mm-hmm. where she was well known. And then there was a whole bunch of a string of other things that she's known for. So Judy Garland and Mickey Rooney were young kids, mm-hmm. and they were groomed by the studios at that time. I think you were owned by the studios. And they had all sorts of challenges, because if you can imagine what the schedules could be like, you know, if you're doing publicity early in the morning and you're shooting midday, and then you have to be out and about, and I'm talking about when they're kids.
Mm-hmm.
We all get tired. I mean, I don't know how anybody functions after 9 o'clock now. I used to know that, but most of us can't. Many of us can't. But we get up really early.
Right.
And they would hook them up on pep pills mm-hmm. and alcohol and all sorts of stuff. And for all of these actors, many of them had challenges later on, because obviously you become addicted to those types of things. And so this looks like the story of maybe her a little later in life.
Right.
And she's trying to, you know, her fortune is not a fortune. And she's got to go out and work and make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And the deal is you've learned how to be an actor. You've learned how to control an audience. I think, I saw Mel Torme once.
Wow.
A long time ago. And they're just a master of just owning that area.
Yeah.
So Judy had to go out, and she talks back to the audience and snappy and peppy.
Yep.
And this is the story of why that happened.
I look forward to this one. I think this, you're right, this is one of those Oscar-worthy kind of conversations about this star that we all know, and Renee Zellweger looks like she really took on the role in this one. There's a movie about a Yeti.
Is there an abomination coming out?
There's an abomination. Abominable, the next DreamWorks animation cartoon, I don't know, cartoon, animated film is coming this week. It's about a Yeti.
All right. Well, just in time for wintertime, Steve. That's when streaming will come.
Yeah, this is... Like most of the DreamWorks stories, this pales in comparison to the Pixar work, in my opinion. And I will see this one eventually, but I won't rush out to the theater to see this one.
There's a different vibe in DreamWorks.
Yeah. This is very Shrek. This is very How to Train Your Dragon storytelling. But it looks beautiful. The idea of a young girl finding a Yeti on the rooftop of her apartment building in Shanghai, and they have to go on a 2,000-mile trek to the Himalayas.
This seems like it was made for multiple audiences, yeah. Steve.
It does. Chloe Bennett from Chicago is the voice of the protagonist Yi in this one.
All right.
So hopefully she has a Chicago accent. That would be the best Shanghai movie ever. Over there.
Steve, are there any independent films that we should be aware of, Steve?
IFC Films is coming out with a title this week called The Day Shall Come. This looks really interesting. This is about a preacher who brings hope to the Miami Projects and is offered cash to save his family from eviction from Homeland Security, who is setting him up to be a villain in the eyes of the public.
All right, so he's just a big, they have like, I shouldn't call it a cult, but it looks like just very an odd group of people. Mm-hmm. And doing odd happenings, certainly very naive, mm-hmm. and very playful.
Uh-huh, when the dinosaur part comes in, and it's pretty silly. This is a very silly,
yes.
Very satirical story about what could happen with a little influence.
If it hits, this is going to be really good. If it doesn't, it's going to be a dud.
I think this might be a strong one. I have high expectations. Anna Kendrick
She's not singing in this, too.
I don't think she's singing in this one, but I will watch just about anything that she does, and of course Jim Gaffigan's in this, because every movie has Jim Gaffigan the last 12 months. It has, doesn't it?
Steve, are there any reading movies I can see?
Yes, there is one called First Love. This is a Japanese story about a young boxer and one night in Tokyo where he has to save a young lady, and then this becomes a ridiculous, silly comedy. It looked like a Japanese gangster movie, and then all of a sudden all the blood of in Ash versus Evil Dead starts happening, and decapitations and just silly things happen. I look forward to First Love, even though you have no interest in it.
I'll be ready to read that, Steve.
Book it. Brings us to our book of the week. You know,
I'm sunburned, Steve.
You are sunburned. You drove here from...
1,000 miles, Steve. 1,000 miles I drove to make sure this would happen today. And I am all here-ish.
Ish. Yeah, right. You're all set for your day today.
I went to see some fraternity brothers to mm-hmm. a football game in Annapolis. And then I went down to a conference that I was going to for work. And then I headed to the beach because, of course, the ocean needs to talk to me.
Yeah.
And to prepare for that moment, Steve... I started listening to this as I left Richmond, Virginia, to head down to the coast. And man, this was right there. This is exactly what I was going to do.
That's right. This is an audio presentation called The 3-Day Effect, How Nature Calms Your Brain. It is put together by Florence Williams. She wrote a book in 2017 called The Nature Fix. So this is kind of like an exploration of those ideas.
Now, I have no idea how I got this book. Maybe I picked it up. Maybe it was a free Audible. I don't know.
It's an Audible exclusive, so it probably came as one of those free ones 1 month back when.
I downloaded it. It was mm-hmm. there. I knew I wanted to see something, and I wanted to find what I was going to do.
Yeah.
So I started listening to it, and then I finished it while I was walking down the beach. I walked about 4 miles a day every day.
So tell us all about the 3-day effect.
All right, so One of the things I've always said is go away. And I usually say
that to you all the time.
Exactly. People say that to me all the time. But go out. I always go to the beach. The beach is the place for me. And when I'm working on some challenges, mm-hmm. I mean, it could be anything, life-changing challenges, anything. That ability to get away from your day-to-day activities. Mm-hmm. For other people, it could be hiking. For some people, it's going to the desert. For some people, it's, you know, just sitting in the woods. I mean, it could be anything that gets you out of your day-to-day moment. And the first day, you're kind of, you know, you're still where you were.
Yeah.
By that third or fourth day, your brain has just totally just collapsed on itself. Creativity just starts bursting through, and you will solve whatever challenges you have at that moment. You will start solving them. And it is incredible. I was solving things in my sleep. I was dreaming.
Yeah.
And by my third or fourth day, man, I was just like in the total zone.
Yeah.
This was very, very powerful for me. And this is a book where we're starting to get some research into that. The joke about this, when I say this book, this audio...
This presentation, whatever we're going to call it.
It sounds like it's like an NPR piece. It's like, Steve works at a local middle school.
Yeah, this could be Florence Williams' podcast. This could be an exploration of her ideas on a weekly or monthly basis. But she packaged it up, or somebody packaged it up, into this one presentation.
So we end up going through four or five stories in this, where one gentleman's finishing up his dissertation. He's actually trying to put data on this. So as they're hiking through wherever they're hiking, they got electrodes hooked up to them, mm-hmm. looking for brain activity. But you know, the challenge that they're running to is just not enough. There's not enough data set. I mean, we've got, you know, whatever it is. It's mm-hmm. certainly not a huge group.
Right.
But there are no doubts that the people that they're choosing, they're experiencing this, Steve. They're experiencing where, you know, blood pressure goes down. But, you know, it could be just because you don't have your cell phone hooked to you.
That's my argument on this. Is it's not the nature that's making these people feel better and their brains work better. It's the ability to disconnect from their daily rituals and get away from their normal life to focus on something other than themselves.
And I'm going to argue that I don't think that is the total issue. I think that, you know, if we went to Disney or to Vegas or something like that, you're not going to experience what heading down, for me, going down to the beach could be.
Mm-hmm.
Because ultimately, it's that ability to, like, sit down and listen to the waves. Or if you're, you know, in nature, it could be listening to the wind blowing, or it could be listening to the crickets or the frogs or whatever it is at the lake house or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But what it does is all of a sudden your brain, it starts working your brain. And that's exactly what, when they were monitoring your brain activity, that's what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a group that went through post-traumatic stress disorder. These were usually people in the military who experienced something. They would go in hikes. They would go out to nature. This is one of the recommendations. And this was a study. And obviously the gentlemen who were there, and they were having these conversations.
Yeah.
And they were definitely experiencing this. We had a group of women who came from, you know, some challenging backgrounds.
Right. Right.
And how, when you're out in nature, hiking or camping or whatever it is, every place you go, the brain looks for novelty. And that ability to have novelty, the ability to connect, and that was one of the other parts in it. That first day, everybody's kind of strangers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, by the third or fourth day, what's happening? All of a sudden, you're your best friend. You guys have talked about something that maybe you've talked to a lot of your buddies about or friends about, but you're really getting to a connected situation. And that closeness, you know, if you think that we've put a lot of articles about people being lonely.
Mm-hmm.
I'm heard. I'm able to articulate something. If something is not articulating really well, maybe they're forcing me to tighten up what's going on. And these people who leave this type of situation now have a network of people that they have these close bonds with. And that's why, you know, when you go and you head on vacation, you meet people and mm-hmm. you talk to them. they could come from any background. They could have anything going on in their life. And they're in a group of people where, you know, safe or not, these people don't know you. You can let it all hang out if you need to. And they're finding solutions. They're finding that connectedness. They're finding solutions.
Mm-hmm. I think the idea of retreat is really what I took away from this.
Okay.
Not necessarily the nature part, because I'm not really willing to go out for 3 days into nature, but the idea of going to the beach.
Well, they could bury you into a cave, Steve.
Right. The idea of going to the beach like you did for the last few days and finding, you know, solace in that situation, finding that rhythm that you're describing, and finding those people to connect with that might be strangers that you connect with for a moment, but that moment might be very powerful for your psyche.
That and a lot of margaritas.
I mean, that is out. Part of retreats in some cases, yes.
So yeah, you get up in the morning, you kind of look at the waves. There's not really music playing on. You're basically just staring out into. Mm-hmm. Then you put a lot of mindfulness. Put your shoes on and you head off for a long walk. And you know, you say hello to people along the way, but you really. You're thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I'm taking a course now. I'm listening to my course, but sometimes I'm just listening to the birds, the sandpipers or whatever, kind of running around and running into animals and seeing dolphins and all sorts of stuff, wrestling sharks. I mean, that's what we did.
Wow. Yeah, this is quite a story of this weekend from you.
But what my point is.
The fish was this big.
That's right. It was huge. It was huge. Then just, you know, parking yourself either in the water or, you know, under an umbrella or something, and just being. Mm-hmm. And it could be sleeping. It could be staring out. It could be conversations. But ultimately, what you're doing is you're unwinding. You don't realize this the first day. But you know the curmudgeon who is walking and all he wants is a beer and he's got his headlamp on because he needs to go someplace.
In this story, there was a character that was
from DC.
He's
writing a book
and he's not interested in this experiment. He just wants a cold beer and a hot shower. That was me. That was the guy that I connected with on this experiment.
And so he goes on this, begging the host who. Interestingly enough, I don't know if you caught this, Steve. She's going through a divorce.
Really? She didn't mention that, actually. She mentioned that like 7 times in this 3 hours.
It's not 7. It was like every other sentence.
Oh, Lord.
Well, anyway, they're walking through. And at the end of this situation, he experienced the same thing. Creativity went up.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't putting the headline. He was looking at through starlight. And he said, listen, I don't know if I would go back and do a hike, but I could see leaving D.C. and coming out to the desert and sitting down and working.
Mm-hmm.
And he was working out a book. He goes, I got 3 bad chapters. I got another, you know, 15 to write. You got to figure out a way to work. And I'm going to actually dovetail this into a Neil Gaiman story. When Neil Gaiman was writing American Gods, that was his journey. He was in a car.
Mm-hmm.
He was just going to hotel, kind of hanging out, writing for a few days.
Mm-hmm.
And that became American Gods. That ability to kind of get someplace, mm-hmm. have a little breakfast, maybe sit out on the deck or something, allows him to move from Wisconsin down to Blacksburg, Virginia. And by the way, Blacksburg, Virginia, the trees are turning.
Yeah.
So the Virginia Tech is the school there. And I always wondered why their colors are this burgundy, maroonish color and orange. And that's because when fall comes, those are the colors of the trees that are surrounding this university.
Nice.
So it's coming.
I was thinking more of a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy when I was listening to this presentation. The final chapter, they talk about how awe is important.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
Being in awe, finding the grandeur of something, something bigger than yourself, finding your place in the universe, the total perspective vortex from the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, finding yourself in this world and being in awe of the size of everything compared to your little problem that you have.
Sure.
There's so much more to this world. That was my favorite chapter of this.
Well, I think that was very important. It certainly had skipped my brain when you brought that up. And it just said it was beyond just like They were actually using a difference between sort of a short term, like, oh, that's interesting, versus awe.
Mm-hmm.
And being that's through the expansive thinking of, wow, this is part of something.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, whether you recognize the limited time you have on the earth, or you recognize the these are the important things I'd like to work on, I'm going to let all these other things go away. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really matter. That ability to escape is important.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to say this to every listener: if you haven't taken a vacation, you need to do it. This is you didn't join the earth to work yourself to death.
Right.
You joined the earth to kind of experience. Whatever.
And I'm going
to
go one step further and say, instead of vacation, the word retreat, because that's what I think that the real thinking, going away to think,
sure,
idea, not going away to Vegas, not going away to Disney World, because those vacations can be stressful. Getting away from those stressors is what I think is being emphasized here.
Well, having a bear could be very stressful too, Steve.
I would love to have a beer.
No, a bear.
Oh, a bear.
He could chase you around.
Hey, picnic baskets. Ranger, sir.
Well, I can easily see little retreats like this. Yes. I agree. Anyway, good stuff. Good
Excellent.
Job.
Excellent. That is called The 3-Day Effect, How Nature Calms Your Brain by Florence Williams. You can find it on our Amazon store, amazon.toomuchscrolling.com.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our scroll with it. And, you know, we have to say, we have to give our condolences to the family of author Bill Shelley. We had him on the show several times.
He was incredibly kind to us, incredibly generous, mm-hmm. and just a wealth of knowledge.
Yeah.
He knew everything.
He knew everything about the world of comics and his life. He gave us his autobiography, Sense of Wonder, which he updated last year. And we have that story now, and we can read back into who he was. Bill Shelley was such an interesting person, and I'm really proud that we had time to talk with him.
Well, you know, we became friends with him through Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And so not only were we able to talk to him about his books, he was very generous in sharing books. He goes, listen, you guys are having something come up here. Have some things to give away.
Yeah.
And he was also just a wealth of interest on his Facebook page. He said, I'm looking for this. Do you guys have an idea of how we'd like to talk about this? And he would create conversations. So
good
job. And I'm sorry, the world will miss him.
Yeah, good guy, Bill Shelley. We will all miss him. You should go and read some of his books and smile when you read them.
Speaking of giveaways, Steve,
if you want some more great information, there's this great thing that's happening on Saturday, September 28th, 2019, is the 5th annual Southgate Media Group Podcast Marathon.
It's International Podcast Day.
Yes,
Steve.
It is.
So that means,
so let's celebrate.
We should celebrate. Now, that means that we'll be performing live.
Uh-huh.
And as we normally do.
First thing in the morning, like we enjoy, because we're morning people.
We're old guys now.
We are old people that wake up early in the morning, so we might as well start talking at 8 o'clock in the morning. So join us at 8 o'clock in the morning on Saturday at the Blue Box Cafe in Elgin, and we're going to do our show, and then there's so many other great shows that are going to happen right after us. They're going to be talking for 12 hours.
That's a lot of talking, Steve.
That we're going to have a lot of fun. We are going to have a lot of fun next Saturday.
We're going to drink some coffee.
A lot of coffee.
Yes.
Because Chris Mao at the Blue Box serves up some fantastic coffee. Great sandwiches. There's breakfast options, muffins. It's did I mention it's a Doctor Who-based cafe? By the way.
Well, Steve, every time we mention that. All right, so Southgate Media Group is our the sponsor of this event. Mm-hmm. They're putting this thing on. We thank them for all the work they do to make this happen. We thank Chris Mao over at the Blue Box Cafe for, you know, opening his facility up for this wonderful thing.
Yes.
And we're going to have a great time. Anybody who wants to show up, please do.
Please show up. Saturday morning cartoons. That's we should put together a theme for our show for Saturday. Sounds like fun. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
We can. We'll meet you Saturday morning at the Blue Box Cafe for next week's show. If you need more information, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-410-4. TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And you can always ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I am a super sunburned casual Chip Hessen player.
We'll see you in the future.